Hi everyone. No musical intro, no big intro, just a quick apology to say that this podcast has been sitting around for a little while before it was edited and published. So there's a couple of references in there that may not make sense, or that it'll make you think, when was this recorded? And I'm just here to confirm that, yes, it was recorded a couple of months ago. But Nikki and I'll be back next week with a nice, fresh podcast. But in the meantime, I think the conversation is still worth having. But hope you enjoy, and we'll be back next week. Thanks. Bye-bye. Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats. I'm not going to do a big long intro today. I'm just going to say, how are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you in summer in Qatar?
Yes, hot, as those who are in this neck of the woods would know. We have lovely weather updates, like you look at your phone and it says 36 degrees, but feels like 52.
And they can't report the feels like. It's they only report the official number.
And you can see it. I think a lot of people don't realise that it's very humid in Qatar. So you can see it in the air. So when you look out the window, it's a funny thing because, you know, I remember living in Canada and it'd be minus 30 and you'd look out the window and it looked like an Australian beautiful sunny day because it was, you know, the sun was out and it was blue skies and whatever. With Qatar, you know that it's hot out there, but you can also tell when it's hugely humid because it's like soup in the air. You know, it's this steamy, you know, you can barely see the city from your view sort of thing, which is normally quite clear. So it's an interesting thing. But anyway, Nikki, let's get on to expat issues. We were sort of texting back and forth last week. You'd gone for a weekend in Sydney. You'd caught up with old friends that you'd had in Hong Kong sort of years ago. And you had a fantastic time. You can elaborate on all of this more. But it kind of, we had a question that came out of that, which you can explain more as we go. But it was the issue that the majority of people that you went away with the other weekend had all met in Hong Kong and been in Hong Kong, and the large majority had all then returned back to Australia and continued their lives, whereas you had gone on and done, I don't know how many more assignments after that. You'd been to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other countries after that, maybe. Maybe I've given you an extra one, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but 4. But no, it gave me an extra one, but yeah.
Yeah. And so it raised the question because they all came back, kept in contact, you know, lived their life, and their kids are all friends, etc. And so it raised the question of, well, what would have your life been like had you done that? What would it look like if you had just done Hong Kong and gone home? And I thought that was interesting because we always say, as expats, we're just going to go for 5 years and then we'll go home. But so many of us don't, you know, like I said, we'll just go for 5 years and then I'll go home. And I know what that's done to me personally, and I know what that choice did to my children. But I think it's an interesting thing to discuss, like how differently your life looks if you choose not to go home. So tell me about it. Tell me your thoughts and how it made you feel that weekend, and what do you think your life would look like had you gone home?
It's really hard to say, isn't it? Because we talk all the time. You know, we said to my parents, oh, we'll be back before, you know, our oldest child starts school. Like, absolutely. And then it was primary school, then it was high school, then it was like, oh, sorry, we're back now. It's like a sliding door moment almost. Like you need a movie to show you what your life would have been like if you'd chosen to get off the train rather than just stay on the train and keep going. I think it's really hard to imagine. We hadn't sold our house in Sydney, so we would have moved back to our house in Sydney. We only sold our house when we moved on to South Africa, so that would have been something. We would have gone back to where we'd been before. And that sort of feels weird. There's so many things that feel weird about it. I just don't know. I see these girls and they have, it was an amazing weekend. There were 15 of us. There was two from Adelaide, one from Melbourne, one from New Zealand, but 10 of the girls more or less came from Sydney. And so they have over the years stayed in contact with each other. They all left Hong Kong at different times, but they have stayed in contact with each other and, you know, their friends, their kids have become friends in many ways. They all played in the playground together when we were in Hong Kong because we all most of us lived in the same apartment complex. And we were saying at the weekend how it is quite unusual possibly for expats who've repatriated to be so close together, to stay in such probably close proximity. It would be quite unusual. It's just that in Hong Kong, when we lived there, it had the second largest Australian expat community in the world. And I don't know if that's the same now, but a lot of the people that we lived in the same apartment building ended up going back to Sydney. So it was just one of those things that was a bit strange. And it's, you know, I talked to them about repatriating. I talked to them about making friends and all that kind of stuff, but they would see each other sort of 5 or 6 times a year probably, and some in smaller groups. And sometimes, you know, now there's sort of big birthdays. They all travel all over the world together to go to these birthdays and things. So it's pretty tight-knit group. I did feel like a little bit of an outsider, but I really loved being there. And there was a couple of us who'd gone on to other countries and don't see them and haven't seen them as much. I just don't know what, I just would think that I would know, I'd feel more back in Australianness, I guess. My kids, you know, they were talking about their kids and how Australian they are compared to, you know, what they had left. And we talked about all sorts of things. At the Olympics, there was a girl swimming from Hong Kong. This was in the chat after we left, but we'd all our kids had learned to swim at the same place that she learned to swim in Hong Kong. And we're like, oh, all that money was well spent then at the swim school because it's produced an Olympic swimmer. So, you know, there was just all these kinds of conversations. And I just think it would be so hard to imagine how we would have kept in contact, how I would have engaged with my friends that I had more recently left. You know, because we're now not back in Sydney, so I don't know how I would have picked up those friendships again. I just think there's so many, what I would have done for work, there's just so many different unknowns that it's so hard to get your head around it, I guess, from that perspective. Kirsty, what about you? Have you thought about your sliding door moment?
Well, it really made me think when you talked about it, because my first location was Jakarta, and the majority of my friends were Australian.
Yeah.
And I think it was because there was an Australian-New Zealand group, and so that was the first place I sort of went to. Whereas we worked, well, my husband worked. I was 5 months pregnant when I arrived in Jakarta. My husband worked for a very international firm, like very, very international, and they were very well known for you know, being that sort of company that moved a lot of people around all over the world. And so I don't know if this had ever occurred to me, which seems so dumb, but I've got a picture of all the kids and they're all wearing little Jakarta like hats. They're babies and they're all on a very Indonesian day bed, you know, all sitting there. They're all Australian. They all have Australian parents. They're all there together. And, you know, all of our baby groups and those weekly meetings and the whatever was all very Australian, you know. We talked about very Australian things. And then we'd go to, you know, the Australian New Zealand Association ball and we'd go to whatever. I guess I did have a very good Scottish friend who was married to an Englishman, and she was kind of my best friend. So I don't know whether that had something to do with it. But I realised that everywhere I moved after that, I really didn't have any Australian friends. It's bizarre, isn't it? Because I, you know, then we went on to Malaysia and I had a lot of British friends, and it was almost like I got further and further removed as I went. You know, I went to Libya. I think there was only one other Australian that I met within the community, and that was someone who worked with my husband who was single. You know, I can't even think about an Australian woman that I met in Libya at the time. And, you know, as I'm saying this, Nikki, I'm thinking, God, I hope time is not doing this
right.
I have a terrible memory.
And someone's listening to this.
Out there going, well, thanks a lot.
Fist in the air, shaking it. Kirsty Rice.
Yeah,
watch your DMs.
Me, watch all your those DMs. Coffees we had together. But yeah, and then in Canada, we lived a very Canadian life. Got to Houston. We actually had Australian neighbours and Australians living down the road, so that was lovely. But my world had sort of, you know, just changed so much from there. But it had never occurred to me. If I'd gone back to Jakarta 15 years later, you know, away from, you know, with that distance from Australia, would have I chosen to just hang out with all Australians, you know, sort of bar a handful of people? Would I have chosen the same things? You know, like there was an Australian school. Would I have gone to that? Or would I have said, no, you know, I've had a look at all the different curriculums and I'm thinking this or whatever. I don't know. It's a really interesting thing of unwittingly, I really made some very big decisions for my family and myself with possibly not thinking about how much I was stretching that stretch. And, you know, Nikki, we've all had those conversations with our kids. You know, I've had, you know, sons that have said, you should have made sure that I knew how to play Australian rules football, or you should have made sure that I knew this. My daughter is very cross with me that I didn't teach her how to dance the nutbush because everybody knows how to dance the nutbush in Australia and she doesn't know how to dance the nutbush. I hadn't even thought about it. And then I think, God, all those Wiggles videos that, you know, that we went through and all the, you know, High Five and, you know, and Steve Irwin and all those things. But there will be things that you don't think about. You know, would they have known that if all of their friends were Aussies and, you know, we all hung out together and someone would have done it? I don't know. But it had been something, Nikki, that I hadn't really thought you and I had ever talked about, the fact that our first locations, we were very, very much living in an Australian bubble.
Yeah, like were we really even expats? I mean,
yes.
I mean, I
yes.
know we were, but yes. I we were just living our life somewhere else. Like it just,
yes.
we really, and you know, I've talked before about how I really struggled moving to South Africa because there were no Australians. Like I
yes.
thought I knew how to be an expat, but I really didn't. You know, of course I had friends who weren't Australian as well in Hong Kong, but most of my friends were Australian. I worked for an Australian company. I was surrounded by Australians all day, every day, saying, oh, hear me, I live in Hong Kong. But really, I mean, physically I was there, but culturally I was probably still 60% Australian in my, you know, exposure and all that and my day to day. From that perspective, probably. So, massive.
And, you know, Nikki, I look at the pros and cons and I have to say, without it being a grass is greener on the other side thing, but I am quite envious of those who moved back, you know, within a 5 to 10 period. I think they were clever because if I was going to kind of compare, I would say that probably they kept themselves in the job market. You know, that it's easier, that if you go back sooner rather than later, that you can stay within the job market. Probably they've got a leg in the housing market. Like you said, you would have gone back to Sydney. Now, I imagine your original house in Sydney is probably worth a fortune now.
I can't even. You know, we looked at it the other day.
Yep. So you go, well, that you'd be better off there, you know, would your children have more of a feeling of stability and all those things. So, you know, yes, I think that is clever. But then I look at what it's given my life here. I mean, I never, ever would have entered a world of writing or, you know, producing or getting certain jobs that I've got, because that was something that only happened. You know, I guess I would have gone back and just worked in what I worked. I wouldn't have thought I would have had anything interesting to write about, possibly. Who knows? Like you said, you don't know how life's going to turn out. But yeah, what would you say if you had your time again? What would you choose?
Well, I don't know if I had my time again, what would I choose? But I remember talking with you on the podcast about how, you know, one of my children is very violently opposed to me, given that I didn't give them any childhood friends. Now, and how they have no stability and they don't belong anywhere. But, you know, this same child has now just recently decided to take a year off. And during that year, she's going to travel and she's going to go to Europe and see all her friends and be there when they graduate. And then she's going to go to the US and do something there and then see friends there. I'm like, if we hadn't been overseas for 16 years of her life, would these same things be happening? The answer is no. So I just, you know, you have your moments where you have your regrets, but then there's also the moments where you think, hey, you know, it wasn't too bad after all.
Yeah. I do think my kids have this very strong international bent to them. They're very good at geography and they know a lot more about international affairs than I ever did, right? I think that's that. I think they're well aware of their privilege, you know, just as kids that could go back to Australia, and that they have a passport that allows them to, you know, travel wherever they want to travel. I think they know and understand more things, but I think everybody gets there. It's just at what age you get there with that knowledge in life, isn't it?
For sure. And my kids have always, always said to me, but how do I do my taxes? And we've just been through the first tax season. They've both done a tax return, which is immeasurably easier now than it used to be with the whiz bang government website. And so now I feel my work here is done, because I was like, I've now taught them the thing they asked for their whole lives, but how do I do my taxes? And so now I think, well, and I used to say to them, you don't know where they're going to be done. So there's no point me explaining how to do taxes in this country. And now they're in this country and they've done them.
Yeah. My second child is here at the moment. She is finishing one job, starting another one next week. So she's come here to have a bit of a look around.
She has new job.
Yes. But she's actually been able to catch up with a couple of friends from school, which is very unusual in this expat world. But because she's here when it's university holidays in America, she has two friends from school who are here with their parents holidaying. So she went yesterday to go and meet in a mall and, you know, have a cup of coffee and whatever. Lots of jokes about how she's caked and coffeed out, because that is very much a Middle East thing to go to the mall and have coffee and cake. She can't believe how many options there are for coffee and cake, but not a lot of options for salad and whatever. But anyway, I digress. But, you know, whenever people are telling me that they've caught up with my children, like friends from Australia, they'll say, oh, you know, I saw Annie the other day and she said, hi, Megan, how are you? You know, and they'll talk about them with these American accents. And Annie said when she had coffee with this girlfriend yesterday, the girlfriend was like, oh, my God, you sound so Australian. And was thinking, no, she doesn't. But it's that thing, isn't it? You don't, about sort of hearing yourself and the changes of what how people perceive you. And that's all part of that gig of being a long-term expat kid. You're going to have a bit of a mush of accents and people are only going to hear the bits that apply to them. You're always going to have to be explaining who you are.
Absolutely. Then in the bits that, yeah, exactly. So you don't hear, like, people talk to my children, they only hear one side of it. I'm like, can't you hear the other bits? Like, the, you know, the Australian bits and the British bits and the other bits, because I can hear those because I knew them when they didn't have those in their accent at all. So yeah, for sure. I don't think one of my kids is working very hard on an Aussie accent and the other one has no interest. So we'll see.
Yes. Yeah, well, we have that in our family too. We have four very different accents because some people really try and shake it off and don't do well at getting rid of it. And so they have this real hodgepodge. And the other, the first one, yeah, she's pretty much only got a few words that you can tell. Okay, Nikki. So I think it's interesting. So basically, you're not going to tell me whether you what you would do if you had your time again.
Well, I don't know. It's too hard to say. I don't have the space yet to think about that. I mean, I think I'd have to be back longer to think that. I don't know. Well, can you say while you're still doing it?
Yeah. I think I like to think that we did it as best as we could. So it is that fine, because you're measuring up what's the best for your children, what's the best for you, right? So I guess for career-wise for my husband, it was a great thing. I think for my husband and I, at this particular time of our lives, we are having a fantastic time because we're living in a place we want to live, and we've got a nice social circle, and we've got, you know, things that we do together as exercise and life, and we do say to each other all the time that we feel very lucky to have the life that we have here in Doha. And I am very lucky that I have the flexibility that I can fly home sometimes every 4 weeks. Sometimes, you know, I think the longest I'm ever away from Australia is there's one particular time for 7 weeks that I'm away, but for the rest of the year I'm back and forth like a yo-yo. And so I feel like I'm there for my children, and they're at an age where they don't need me all the time and whatever. So I'm making this very long-winded. I guess it's if you mourn. I'm not mourning the loss of what their lives would have been like if they'd gone home, but I can see the benefits to them too with that stability. But I think Greg and I might have just escaped quite free, because I didn't realize, you know, COVID was a bit of a bonus for us getting home together, where it was an absolute nightmare for those that were stranded. And there were some absolute tragedies that happened in that time. And I think if I hadn't have been home, well, yeah, I would have a lot more, because I would have lost my father and not been able to be in the country. So I think I'd be very angry about my expat life. Do you know, so I don't have any bitterness there, because I feel like I've been able to be home at the right moments and manage the being away and back and whatever. So, but I could see that if that hadn't have happened, yep, I reckon I would be very bitter about our expat life if I'd been stuck away from people.
Yeah, I can totally understand
I've
that.
I've taken that conversation to a completely different place now, Nikki, haven't I?
It doesn't matter. That's what it's about. It's about exploring the topic and really understanding our feelings on it. And I'm sure that some of the people listening have those feelings, because I'm sure some of the people that, you know, some of the Fatarati, well, we know 100%, weren't able to go where they needed to be or where they wanted to be, felt they were needed during COVID, and the same things happened. So, yeah, I think it's fair. I think COVID is still, we love to forget it, but it's still very simmering near the surface. It's not that far down.
Oh, yeah. I read something today where someone said, oh my gosh, it's 2025 in a few months' time, and I'm still processing what we all went through in 2020. And that's when you think, God, it was that long ago. But yeah.
But I mean, kids had 2 to 3 years of interrupted schooling. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. With the uninterrupted schooling. Absolutely. So, Nikki, our three favourite things. I want to go back to, because I'm pretty sure we spoke about this when I first read this article in a magazine. So, Stephanie Wood wrote in one of the, and I feel bad that I can't tell you which weekend magazine to a newspaper that it was in Australia, but she wrote something called, and it was about sort of her being, not ghosted, but her being catfished by a guy, and it was absolutely fantastic. It was all about how she met this guy on a dating app and that she discovered that he wasn't everything that he made himself out to be. And it was just brilliant reading. It was absolutely fantastic. Just loved it, loved it. Anyway, she then went on to write a book called Fake, and I then read the book and I enjoyed the book just as much, even though I had already read the article. I can't remember if it was, it might have been, it was one of the Sydney papers, I think. Anyway, then it's just been turned into an 8-part sort of mini series. I think they're about 40-minute episodes. Asha Keddy from Offspring and many other things plays Birdie, the lead character. It, oh, Nikki, I watched it when I was in Bali with my family, and I would just sneak off for a 40-minute sort of sneaky and watch an episode. But I was loving it. I was so cross that nobody else would jump on the bandwagon with me. Like, I wanted everybody else to sort of watch it together, and everyone was like, no, 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 doesn't do it for me at all. I just thought it was one of Asha Keddy's best performances. It was brilliant. And I'd seen Asha in Strife, and I like Strife, but I didn't, you know, it didn't grab me in that way. I thought it was okay, but I didn't maybe find her as convincing, which I think is a lot to do with you're thinking, this is Mia Friedman, but then you're thinking, no, this is loosely based on Mia Friedman, but it's not Mia Friedman because she's not married and she's not whatever. Whereas with Fake, I was hook, line and sinker. I was in there and all over this character. I thought she just put in a wonderful performance. David Wenham plays the boyfriend, and I've seen people sort of writing about how creepy they found him and how annoying they found him. He was brilliant at it. One of the things I really enjoyed about it was I had signed up to the Substack of Stephanie Wood. I think it might be called Vamp, I can't remember, but it's, so I'd signed up to her Substack, and part of her Substack was she, as the series aired, she would have a live chat so that people could talk to her about it, which I thought was extraordinary because it was so good to hear from her. I thought it was brilliant. Anyway, so that's one. My second one is Dark Waters, which is not new at all. It's a 2019 sort of legal thriller. But our son watched it and said to us on FaceTime sort of one Saturday afternoon, you guys need to watch Dark Waters. It's brilliant. And it's the story of DuPont and basically Teflon and the toxicity of the product within Teflon and what it was doing and the cancers it caused and the damage it did. And it sort of starts, you know, with a farmer and dead cows, and it's very American. Mark Ruffalo plays the lawyer who, it's an interesting twist because he works for a big legal company that usually protects and looks after these sorts of firms like DuPont, but he crosses to the other side because he's got a family connection, because it's from close to home where it's happening. Anyway, I just thought if you're looking for a movie, because so often, you know, on a Friday or Saturday night, you're sitting at home with your partner going, I want to watch a movie, and then you scroll through a gazillion things. This is one that both G and I absolutely loved. It was really gripping, and it's a good story, but it will really make you think about anything that has a coating on it and how you want to use it. And then, oh, I've got four things here, Nikki. I'm sorry, but it's been a while since we spoke, and I've just loved both of these things. So the other series that I watched is Dinosaur. And the thing that is brilliant about Dinosaur is the lead character is autistic, but as one of the reviews said, the best thing about this show is while she's autistic, the story is not defined by her autism. It just gives people an insight into tiny parts of how that affects, you know, her life and what she does. Dinosaur is basically two sisters. who are very codependent. They're young. They live together. One is a paleontologist, and she's autistic and lives her life in a very, you know, strategic and measured way. And the other one is a little bit more airy-fairy, and she provides the fun and the, you know, silliness and the whatever, and she gets engaged. And it's all about how her sister copes with her sort of entertaining the idea of being with someone else and living with someone else and changing their very, you know, structured life into something else. The family is gorgeous. It is brilliantly done. The parents are hysterical. It's just a really good, it's Scottish. It's produced by BBC Three. I think you'll find it on Hulu. But I just thought it was a great series, and it's called Dinosaur. And then the last one, Nikki, is the one I keep blabbing on about in our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, because it feels so close to home. And it is the story of Anthea Bradshaw, who is from Adelaide, which is obviously where I'm from. So was her partner. She went to a school that a lot of my friends went to with her husband. They decided that they wanted an expat life. They travelled, you know, together as, you know, as girlfriend, boyfriend. They came home, they got married, he got a job in Brunei. She stayed in Australia for 3 months, and then she went to go and visit him in Brunei. And she was killed on the last day that she was there. She was killed in their apartment in Brunei, and it remains unsolved. And it is highly questionable what happened. And this one just struck me because I know a lot of people who have lived in Brunei. And the thing they'll tell you is that it's incredibly safe in Brunei, that the culture there is very gentle, you know, that the people are wonderful. And it just seems so odd. And also I couldn't believe that I was, you know, when you go, well, where was I when this happened? And why have I forgotten this?
Yeah.
How do I not know
about
this?
Why don't I know about it? Yeah.
Yes. And it was 1994 when it happened. So it's a Channel 9 journalist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was before.
Yes, yes. And it's a Channel 9 journalist who's gone back and he is talking to people. And you can imagine how hard it is for people to recall those sort of details for him, you know, when they're talking about whether they got back on the bus at 1 o'clock to go back to the office, and if she had red shorts on or did she have a red t-shirt on, they're not quite sure. And, you know, is it possible? Anyway, it is so interesting. I've just devoured the fifth episode. And it is incredibly sad because you realize that this family is just broken by this. You know, an unsolved murder is horrendous when you can't get those details. It makes you realize if anything terrible was ever to happen to someone you love far away, you should get on a plane and go there. Don't leave it to the experts. You should get there because it makes such a difference to the people who are investigating and part of it.
Yeah, you see that a lot though, don't you, though, when, because unfortunately bad things happen to people in Australia, and a lot of people come to Australia on a year working visa or whatever, and when something bad happens, their families come here and they come to sort of look for them or to help investigate or whatever. And you always think it's such a big thing for them to come when they're going through what's one of the worst things they've ever had to go through. And it just, with you saying that, that, it, you know, if you ever have any question, you should get on a plane and go to where something bad happened. It's, you know, it really, when you see the people in the news and they get a lot of media attention, and you think, oh, should they just be leaving them alone? But obviously it can be helpful to, in the moment, to generate that, and that's what they're here for, that the authorities find it helpful as opposed to not.
Yeah, because the person becomes more of a person because you're there to advocate for them and talk about them and tell people about them. But also in this case, her parents had no idea that her husband had been locked away as a suspect, and his parents went over there, or his father, and sort of, you know, I guess for want of a better term, sorted it out. But they had no idea that he was even a suspect. So if they had gone there, they might, you know, they might have felt differently. They were kind of leaving it for him as her husband to, you know, look after and to report back to them and tell them things and whatever. But it, there's a lot to this story, Nikki. It's like there is so much to it. You have to listen to it. I think you would absolutely love it.
I would, and I keep meaning to download it. It's interesting. So when I was on my weekend away, we were talking, the group of us were talking about a case that happened in Hong Kong while we were there. There was an incident at an apartment block on Hong Kong Island where people had found a resident of an apartment rolled up in a rug, and he had been killed by a milkshake. And his wife was arrested and put in jail, and she did it. But she was a – it turned out that she had been in an abusive relationship and had just whatever. But Hong Kong law doesn't recognize an abusive relationship as being in any way a contributing factor to anything. So she's just there in jail for the rest of her life. So, but we were just sort of sitting there talking about it, just going – you know, it's just one of those things that we will always remember because it was part of our, you know, the lore of while we were there, and same sort of stuff. I'm sure the people that were in Brunei at that time would have a story about that. And be, I mean, not that it's nice to tell stories, but it's just so consequential at the time. And it just, because the court case went a totally different way than it would have gone had she been in America or had she been in another country that saw things differently or was able to take in evidence of different situations.
Yes. So if you're thinking of killing your husband, make sure you take him home first before you do it. And I'm not making...
That's right. Okay, we're not condoning that at all. No, That's not something we're condoning.
No.
Okay, so my three things... After your three things, I feel a little bit flippant in mine, but I did see the shorts of Dinosaur because you did send me it. But I don't know, where did you actually watch it on? I did want to watch Nikki, that because I don't have access to Hulu anymore.
It's a ripper, SBS. You just go to that's how I watched it.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, so SBS, awesome.
If you're in Australia, SBS, or if you have access to SBS on your Apple TV.
Awesome. Yes,
and that's the other beautiful thing. Okay. It's free.
Free if you're Australian or free if you're Australian. Okay, so my three things, a bit boring. Well, no, just a bit different. So the first one is The Gentlemen. It's a Netflix series. It's not really new. It's not really old. But it's something that my husband and I watch together, and there are so few things apart from an episode of CSI over dinner every night that we do watch together. So it was nice to find a series that we did sit down and watch together. And it's obviously, you've probably already seen it or you're not interested, but Sam did say to me, I flicked past this series so many times, I'm glad that we watched it. Because, you know, when you sit down to watch, because we've got a smart TV, so we don't turn on the TV and have like channels. We just have all the apps in front of us. And so it just throws things at us. And, it kept throwing The Gentleman at him, and he didn't. And then one day we said, oh, let's watch an episode. And then so then we watched that together for a little, well, till we finished it. It's based on the movie, obviously. It's a spin-off of the movie of the same name, and it's a Guy Ritchie production. So it's in very much in that vein. Quite a bit of comedy, but quite a bit of gore as well. And Theo James, who I think is a little bit good looking, so it's easy on the eye to watch. So I did enjoy that, and it's recently been...
It is fantastic.
Yeah, and it's recently been announced.
It was very, very funny.
And recently been announced to have a new season, so that's awesome. We're looking forward to that. My second favorite thing is a podcast called The Rest is Entertainment with
yes,
Marina Hyde and Richard Osborne. Now, it's a BBC.
I love it.
BBC one.
Totally agree. Brilliant. Brilliant insight behind the scenes.
I've never really listened about it. I've never really listened to it because I've always got my pop culture from other places. But I think that when pop culture is spoken about in a posh British accent, it sounds much more cerebral to really think about it. That's my biases coming through there. But so they have two episodes a week, which we love a podcast that has more than one episode a week, if you're liking it. And one where they talk about, you know, a topic of the day or topics of the day, and then a questions and answers episode. And I really love it. I've recently started listening to more on a more regular basis, and I think it's great, and I'm a big fan. So if you like pop culture and you like British accents, dig in, I say. And my third favorite thing is, well, what we always remember every 4 years about the Olympics, and I'm not going to talk about Ray Gun, but I am going to talk about the Olympic attendees and their social media accounts, because I just thought, I feel like Paris, there wasn't social media in Paris really, because everyone had to be COVID conventional, and not Paris, sorry, Tokyo. And I feel that in Tokyo, I don't really remember the Olympics in Tokyo. Like it was on a different time zone. We didn't watch it much. I think we were living in Germany and I didn't even see it. I'm not really sure. I don't remember the Tokyo Olympics. But I feel like this has been the first real social media Olympics where athletes have had their own vibe going on, and there's just been some really funny stuff. And I read an interesting article about the Olympics who had the most engaging content and who gained the most followers. And the person who gained the most followers was an American gymnast guy who I had never heard of, and I don't watch the gymnastics, so he meant nothing to me. But he's had something like a 14,000% increase in followers. So I guess he won a gold medal.
Because he was the man who wore the glasses and yes. the little naps.
Yes.
And then he'd come on and do his thing. Yes. He was absolutely brilliant. And I know who you're going to say next. And I'm so excited about this woman. I absolutely love her. I've spoken about her to so many people, but away you go.
Yeah, no. And I'm just going to say, you know, my favorite two probably were Ilona Marr and Leon Marchand, just because I love the swimming. Aussies are swimming people, because it's where we win all our medals. We love to focus on the swimming. And he was just such a powerhouse for the French team. And it was just incredible what he did. And the fact that he won two gold medals in one night, 2 hours apart. I mean, I just don't understand how you regulate all the hormones in your body to be able to do that after winning one gold medal and then turning around. And I just thought he was fantastic. And Ilona Marr, I mean, Kirstie, we can talk about her forever, because she was incredible. And I did, before I even was watching any of the rugby, I saw her little TikToks. Somehow they appeared on my feed. The algo knew what I wanted to see and it gave it to me. And just, she's fantastic, just on so many levels.
I think what Ilona Marr has done for those of us who are not petite, tiny, you know, I guess what people would have said is pretty young things, you know, she is fit and strong, and she can wear her rugby uniform and just look like the most powerful female athlete you would ever come across. And then the next minute she's dressed up and so glam, but says so much to people about just be kind, like stop talking about us like this, stop. And I think you know, with the female boxer whose name has just completely escaped me, but the female boxer who receives so much grief,
yeah,
about, you know, people questioning who she was, I just think Ilona Marr did so much in that space as well, because she also gets told that she looks too masculine, that she's, you know, too scary, too whatever. But do you know, Nikki, one of the things, the social media accounts, and I've only just sort of thought about this, the social media accounts were fantastic. And I thought exactly the same as you, because I thought, wow, we get to see so much more about these athletes than we've ever seen before. They're not just people that come out and run for 10 seconds and disappear. They're people that we hear their backstory, see their parents, get to know the whole thing. But what the flip side of that is, how much misinformation was able to be circulated on social media. So I went along to play Mahjong, as I do every Wednesday, and a really good friend of mine who I really respect and like said to me, yeah, I'm not sure about her though, because, you know, they are really a man. And I was like, what? And it was total... and she was really embarrassed because she said... She goes, everything that pops up in my feed keeps telling me about, you know, testosterone tests and blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. When we all sat down and we all shared everything we'd read and everything we knew, everyone realized that there was so much fake. It is like poor old the breakdancer, Ray Gunn. So much misinformation, yes, for her. You know, this woman's been absolutely ostracized. And nobody knows the true history of her background or where she had to go to compete or qualify, or seen her when she's not in that ridiculous uniform that she chose to wear tucked in, but seen her when she's in her jeans and her oversized baggy t-shirt and she's doing her thing. So I think, yes, it was wonderful for us to get to know the athletes, but it also showed me how terrifying our news services can be and how people can spread just such misinformation that is just purely opinion based.
And it's so weird, and I this comes back to my favorite subject, which is the US presidential elections, but we won't go right down that rabbit hole. But there is, if you listen to Americast, which is another excellent BBC podcast, there is a woman who carries 6 phones with her. And I can't remember if I talked about this last time or not, but each phone has the social media feed of a different person, in inverted commas. So someone who is not politically motivated at all, someone who is very conservative, someone who is very liberal, and then one either side of that. And every time something happens, she pulls out these phones and she can see in the, because nothing else touches these phones, they're not manipulated at all. Like, she just set up this person as whatever, and then this person is whatever, and their social media feeds are totally different. The algorithm, it's to blame for everything.
Yes, but do you know what? It's not even just solely what they're seeing, as in what they're reading and what gets fed to them. It's the comments. I hadn't realized that you and I could watch the same reel on Instagram, but they will choose which comments I'm going to see and which comments you're going to see. So a woman was saying she's a golfer, her husband's a golfer, and they both watch the same golfing TikTok, or that then become an Instagram reel. So they watched it, and it was one about, because in the golfing world, every now and again there's a really boring reel that'll come up with the same story of, you know, what I tell my wife when I go to play golf or whatever. It's like, you know, these men that infantilize their themselves as if they've got to sneak off and do whatever. Anyway, but she had watched it, and her husband had watched it, and the top of her comments were all men and women that sort of said, mate, you know, like, well, maybe help her out for a few hours and then go to golf, or, you know, mate, you need to work out a better schedule, or blah, 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 blah. And then his comments that he saw first were things like, you need a new wife, or you need to tell her to calm the farm, or you need to whatever. So they were both what comments they thought those people would want to see, that she would want to see comments from her perspective and he would want comments from his. And this is, you know, that whole rage fueling, you know, it's just,
it's maybe still the algorithm.
Yes, it's still the algorithm. But, you know,
it's everywhere. It could make the world come together if it wanted to, but it doesn't.
It
because anger is the number one engagement.
Yes.
Anger is the number one engagement tool. Not happy thoughts, not puppies, not kittens, yes, not nothing. Anger.
Unless of course.
Insane.
Unless of course you're in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group. I went for dinner on Friday night with a whole bunch of people, And the woman next to me was saying to her husband, oh, Kirsty's got this Facebook group, Two Fat Expats, blah, blah, blah. And then because it was all, you know, men sitting on one side of the table, women sitting on the other side of the table, sort of whatever. And then the women started to explain to the blokes, you know, what the Two Fat Expats group is. And I loved it. It was just so lovely because I kind of had to take a compliment. You know, when people usually give you a compliment, you say stop, you know, and you just quickly change the subject. But because they were all sort of talking about it. But what I thought was really nice was everyone said, it's just this amazing group where everyone stays nice and they just share information for the sake of being nice and sharing what they've learned and giving each other information. And it's a really nice place to be, and there's no one, you know, that's, you know, trying to sell your stuff or do whatever. And I just thought, you know, Nikki, that is a credit that group, I mean, we're now up to 46,000 people, that it does stay nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. And that, you know, occasionally, yeah, we get people that get grumpy. And I think we managed to sort of manage that reasonably well. But yeah, I thought it was a really nice, I couldn't have asked for nicer feedback about that group. It was really lovely.
That's so lovely. And I also want to say thank you to the Fatarachi who wrote me messages after our last podcast where I talked about how I was still 1 year and I didn't have one friend. And I've had some absolutely just gorgeous messages. And I just want to tell everybody that yesterday I went out and had lunch with someone who could be a new friend of mine. So I just want everyone to know that on this past weekend, I attended two social events with two different sets of people. And so that's future's looking brighter here in Bagara. So everyone's still welcome to come visit, but I might even have a friend by then. But anyway, but I just want to say because the Fatarachi are so lovely and do say really lovely, special things, and both within both the podcast listeners and within the group. So thanks, Fatarachi. We love you.
I can imagine you do get a lot of that. I can imagine that because I have people, they say to me, "Ooh, how's Nikki?" It's just like, she's okay. But it's like this wincing, ooh, how's she going?
I did have someone wrote me and they said, I've been back a year and I've moved to rural Victoria and it's not, you know, where I lived before and I'm feeling every single thing you're feeling. And I just wanted to give her a hug and say, it's okay. It's okay. We'll make it. We can make it.
Okay, Nikki, it was lovely to talk to you again, and we will do this.
It was lovely, and have a wonderful visit with your gorgeous, gorgeous second child.
Thank you. Okay, bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.